but you'll lose just the same. So long, it was so long ago, but I still got the blues for you.
Welcome to the first installment of the Mercury Theater on Air. You just heard an awesome radio hour by some other people. And we are going to start off this with a little tune by John Quiñones. One moment, please. Silence there, but
Feel the same. back again. This boy, this boy, this boy, this boy.
We just heard a couple songs We started with It Was Only a Dream by Joey Quiñones, and then went to I'm Just a Vagabond Lover by Rudy Vili and his Connecticut Yankees. And I mean, I also played This Boy by the Beatles, a classic. And the last song you just heard was The Limit by Cindy Lee, one of my new favorite artists. A sort of revival of some 50s dancehall music, which I think is really cool. I'm going to play a couple more songs, and then I think maybe get to reading a story or something. Yeah. This next one coming up is by the Mamas and the Papas.
It's hard for you, my baby, because it's hard for me, my baby, and the darkest hour is just before dawn.
Hello again. While that song plays out, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the future of this show. It's currently just me, but I have a co-host, Allie Landeker, who will be joining us, not this Friday, but the next one, for our first official episode of the Mercury Theater on Air. On this show, we plan to be reading some radio plays for you live. We'll have some actors in the studio and some accompaniment, some sound effects. So tune in to a Friday from now, not next Friday, but the next one, to hear. We're going to start with War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells' radio play by Orson Welles. And the Mercury Theater on Air is Orson Welles' old radio play company, theater company. So that was the reference from that. But yeah, I'm next going to read a little story by Ray Bradbury, who's one of my favorite authors. Well, before that, I'll tell you about the songs. We just listened to Heavy Metal by Cindy Lee, another Cindy Lee one, off of the album What's Tonight to Eternity, which is maybe one of my favorite albums of all time. Really gorgeous one. I would recommend giving it a listen. And yeah, we're going to read a little bit of this short story called Dandelion Wine. It's pretty long, so I might not finish it, but it's one of my favorite short stories, one of my favorite things Ray Bradbury's written. But yeah, hope you enjoy. Tune in. This first part is called Illumination. Crossing the lawn that morning, Douglas Spalding broke a spiderweb with his face. A single invisible line on the air touched his brow and snapped without a sound. So with the subtlest of incidents, he knew that this day was going to be different. It'd be different also because, as his father explained, driving Douglas and his 10-year-old brother Tom out of town towards the country, there were some days compounded completely of odor. Nothing but the world blowing in one nostril and out of the other. And some days, he went on, were days of hearing, every trump and trill of the universe. Some days were good for tasting, and some for touching, and some days were good for all senses at once. This day now, he nodded, smelled as if a great and nameless orchard had grown up overnight beyond the hills to fill the entire visible land with its warm freshness. The air felt like rain, but there were no clouds. Momentarily, a stranger might laugh off in the woods, but there was silence. Douglas watched the traveling land. He smelled no orchards and sensed no rain, for without apple trees or clouds, he knew neither could exist. And as for the stranger laughing deep in the woods? Yet the fact remained, Douglas shivered, this, without reason, was a special day. The car stopped at the very center of the quiet forest. All right, boys, behave. They'd been jostling elbows. Yes, sir. They climbed out, carrying the blue tin pails away from the lonely dirt road into the smell of fallen rain. Look for bees, said Father. Bees hang around grapes like boys around kitchens. Doug? Douglas looked up suddenly. You're off a million miles, said Father. Look alive. Walk with us. Yes, sir. And they walked through the forest. Father very tall, Douglas moving in his shadow, and Tom very small, trotting in his brother's shade. They came to a little rise and looked ahead. Here, did they see? Father pointed. Here was where the big summer quiet winds lived and passed in the green depths like ghost whales unseen. Douglas looked quickly, saw nothing, and felt put upon by his father, who, like Grandpa, lived on riddles. But still, Douglas paused and listened. Yes, something is going to happen, he thought. I know it. Here's a maidenhair fern, Dad walked, the tin pail belling in his fist. Feel this? He scuffed the earth. A million years of good, rich leaf mold laid down. Think of the autumns that got by making like this. Boy. I'm going to skip that part. Douglas felt but did not feel the deep loam, listening, watchful. We're surrounded, he thought. It'll happen. What? He stopped. Come out, wherever you are, whatever you are, he cried silently. Tom and Dad strolled on the hushed earth ahead. Finest lace there is, said Dad quietly. and he was gesturing up through the trees above to show them how it was woven across the sky, or how the sky was woven into the trees. He wasn't quite sure which. But there it was. He smiled, and the weaving went on, green and blue. If you watched and saw the forest shift, its humming loom. Dad stood comfortably, saying this and that, the words easy in his mouth. He made it easier by laughing at his own declarations just so often. He liked to listen to the silence, he said, if silence could be listened to, for, he went on, that in silence you could hear wildflower pollen sifting down the bee-fried air. By God, the bee-fried air. Listen, the waterfall of birdsong beyond those trees. Now, thought Douglas, here comes, running. I don't see it, running, almost on me. Fox grapes, said Father. We're in luck, look here. Don't! Douglas gasped, but Tom and Dad bent down to shove their hands deep in the rattling bush. The spell was shattered. The terrible prowler, the magnificent runner, the leaper, the shaker of souls had vanished. Douglas, lost and empty, fell to his knees. He saw his fingers sink through the green shadow and come forth stained with such color that it seemed he had somehow cut the forest and delivered his hand into the open wound. Lunchtime, boys! With buckets half burdened with fox grapes and wild strawberries, followed by bees which were no more, no less, said Father, the world humming under its breath. They sat on a green moss log, chewing sandwiches and trying to listen to the forest the same way Father did. Douglas felt Dad watching him, quietly amused. Dad started to say something that he had crossed his mind, but instead tried another bite of the sandwich and mused over it. Sandwich outdoors isn't a sandwich anymore. Tastes different than indoors, notice? Got more spice. Tastes like mint and pine sap. Does wonders for the appetite. Douglas's tongue hesitated on the texture of the bread and deviled ham. Nope. No, it was just a sandwich. Tom chewed and nodded. No, just what you mean, Dad. It almost happened, thought Douglas. Whatever it was big. My gosh, it was big. Something scared it off. Where was it now? Back of that bush. No, behind me. No, here, almost here. He kneaded his stomach secretly. If I wait, it'll come back. It won't hurt. Somehow I know it's not here to hurt me. What then? What? What? You know how many baseball games we played this year, last year, and the year before? Said Tom, apropos of nothing. Douglas watched Tom's quickly moving lips. Wrote it down. 1,568 games. How many times I brushed my teeth in 10 years? 6,000. Washed my hands? 15,000. Slept? 4,000 some odd times, not counting naps. Ate 600 peaches, 800 apples, pears, 200. I'm not hot for pears. Name a thing, I got the statistics. Runs to the billions, millions, things I've done, add them up 10 years. Now, thought Douglas, it's coming close again. Why? Tom talking? But why Tom? Tom chatting along, mouth crammed with sandwich. Dad there, alert as a mountain cat on the log, and Tom letting the words rise like a quick soda bubbles in his mouth. Books I read? 400. Matinees I seen? 40 Buck Joneses, 30 Jack Hoxies, 45 Tom Mixes, 39 Hoot Gibsons, 192 single and separate Felix the Cat cartoons, 10 Douglas Fairbankses, 8 repeats on Lon Chaney, the Phantom of the Opera, 4 million Silsies, and 1 Adolph Manjou thing that about love where I spent 90 hours in the theater toilet waiting for the mush to be over so I couldn't see. Where everyone held on to everybody else and screamed for 2 hours without letting go. During that time, I figure 400 lollipops, 300 Tootsie Rolls, 700 ice cream cones. Tom rolled quietly along his way for another 5 minutes, and then Dad said, how many berries you picked so far, Tom? 256 on the nose, said Tom instantly. Dad laughed, and lunch was over, and they moved again into the shadows to find the fox grapes and the tiny wild strawberries, bent down, all three of them, hands coming and going and the pails getting heavy, Douglas holding his breath, thinking, yes, yes, it's near again, breathing up on my neck, almost. Don't look, work. Just pick, fill up the pail. If you look now, you'll scare it off. Don't lose it this time. But how do you bring it around here when you can't see it? Stare it right in the eye? How? Got a snowflake in a matchbox, said Tom, smiling at the wine glove on his hand. Shut up, Douglas wanted to yell, but no. The yell would scare the echoes. Run the thing away. And wait. The more Tom talked, the closer the great thing came. It wasn't scared of Tom. Tom drew it with his breath. Tom was part of it. Last February, said Tom, and chuckled. Hail in a matchbox, up in a snowstorm, let one old snowflake fall in, shut it up, ran inside the house, and stashed it in the icebox. Close, very close. Douglas stared at Tom's flickering lips. He wanted to jump around, for he felt a vast tidal wave lift up behind the forest. In an instant, it would smash down, crush them forever. Yes, sir, mused Tom, picking the grapes. I'm the only guy in all of Illinois who's got a snowflake in the summer. Precious as diamonds, by gosh. Tomorrow I'll open it, Doug. You can look, too. Any other day, Douglas might have snorted, struck out, denied it all. But now, with the great thing rushing near, falling down in the clear air above him, he could only nod, eyes shut. Tom, puzzled, stopped picking berries and turned to stare over at his brother. Douglas, hunched over, was an ideal target. Tom leaped, yelling, handed. They fell, thrashed, and rolled. No, Douglas squeezed his mind shut. No! But suddenly, yes, it's all right. Yes, the tangle, the contact of bodies, the falling tumble, had not scared off the tidal sea that crashed now, flooding and washing them along the shore of grass deep through the forest. Knuckles struck his mouth. He tasted rusty warm blood, grabbed Tom hard, held him tight. And so in silence they lay, hearts churning, nostrils hissing. And at last, slowly, afraid he would find nothing, Douglas opened one eye. And everything, absolutely everything, was there. The world, like a great iris of an even more gigantic eye, which has also just opened and stretched out and to compass everything, stared back at him. And he knew what it was that had leaped upon him to stay and would not run away now. I'm alive, he thought. His fingers trembled, bright with blood, like the bits of a strange flag now found and before unseen, and him wondering what country and what allegiance he owed it. Holding Tom, but not knowing him there, he touched his free hand so that it, as if it could be peeled away, held up, turned it over, and then he let go of Tom and lay on his back with his hands up in the sky. You all right, Doug? Asked Tom. His voice was at the bottom of a green moss well, somewhere underwater, secret, removed. The grass whispered under his body. He put his arm down, feeling the sheath of fuzz on it, and far away, below, his toes crackling in his shoes. The wind sighed over his shelled ears. The world slipped bright over the glassy round of his eyeballs, like images sparkled in a crystal sphere. Flowers were sun and fiery spots of sky strewn through the woodland. Birds flickered like skipped stones across the vast inverted pond of heaven. His breath raked over his teeth, going in like ice, coming out fire. Insects shocked the air with electric clearness. 10,000 individual hairs grew a millionth of an inch on his head. He heard the twin hearts beating in each ear, the third heart beating in his throat, the two hearts throbbing in his wrist, the real heart pounding in his chest. The million pores on his body opened. I'm really alive, he thought. I never knew it before, or if I did, I don't remember. He yelled it out loud, but silent, a dozen times. Think of it. 12 years old, and only now, discovering this rare timepiece, this clock, gold bright and guaranteed to run 80, left under a tree and found while wrestling. Doug, you okay? Douglas yelled, grabbed Tom, and rolled. Doug, you're crazy! Crazy! They spilled downhill, the sun in their mouths, in their eyes like shattered lemon glass, gasping like trout thrown out a bank, laughing till they cried. Doug, you're not mad? No. Douglas's eyes shut, saw spotted leopards pad in the dark. Tom, then quieter. Tom, does everyone in the world know he's alive? Sure, heck yes. The leopards trotted soundlessly off through the darker lands where eyeballs could not turn to follow. I hope they do, whispered Douglas. Oh, I sure hope they know. Douglas opened his eyes. Dad was standing high above them, there in the green-leafed sky, laughing, hands on his hips. Their eyes met. Douglas quickened. Dad knows, he thought. It was all planned. He brought us here on purpose so this could happen to me. He's in on it. He knows it all. And he knows that I know. A hand came down and seized him through the air, swayed on his feet with Tom and Dad, still bruised. One sec. Still bruised, rumpled, puzzled, and awed. Douglas held his strange boned elbows tenderly and licked the fine cut lip with satisfaction. He then looked up at Dad and Tom. I'll carry all the pails, he said. This once, let me haul everything. They handed over the pails with quizzical smiles. He stood swaying slightly. The forest collected, full-weighted and heavy with syrup, clenched hard in his down-slung hands. I want to feel all there is to feel, he thought. Let me feel tired now. Let me feel tired. I mustn't forget. I'm alive. I know I'm alive. I mustn't forget it. Tonight or tomorrow or the day after that. The bees followed, and the smell of fox grapes and yellow summer, as he walked heavy-laden and half-drunk, his fingers wondrously calloused, arms numb, feet stumbling, so his father caught his shoulder. No, mumbled Douglas. I'm all right. I'm fine. It took half an hour for the scents of the grass, the roots, the stones, the bark of the mossy log to fade from where they had laid patterned in his arms, legs, and back. While he pondered this, let it slip, slide, dissolve away, his brother and his quiet father followed behind, allowing him to pathfind the forest alone out towards that incredible highway which would take them back to town. Going to have a little musical interlude now, but that was the first part of the story.
Come over to the window, my little darling. I'd like to try to read your poem. I used to think I was some kind of gypsy boy before I let you take me home. Now so long, Marianne, it's time we began. Well, you know that I love to live with you, but you make me forget so very much. I forget to pray for the angels, and then the angels forget to pray for us. So long, Marianne, it's time that we began to laugh and cry and cry and laugh about it all again. We met when we were all in the green lilac park. You held on to me like I was a crucifix as we went kneeling through the dark. Oh, so long, Marianne, I'm weeping to love. Cry and laugh about it all again. Your letters, they all say that you're beside me now. Then why do I feel alone? I'm standing on a ledge and your fine spider web is fastening my ankle to a stone. Now so long, Marianne, it's time that we began to laugh and cry and cry and laugh. For now, I need
That was So Long Marianne by Leonard Cohen. Wonderful song. And I'm going to read a little PSA right now. It's space heater safety tips. Space heaters can be a very effective form of supplemental heating, allowing you to stay toasty warm in an area that you spend a lot of time in, while helping you save money by keeping the rest of your home at a lower temperature. However, space heaters account for 1/3 of home heating fires and 81% of home heating fire deaths, so it's important to follow the manufacturer's safety and operating instructions. In particular, keep anything that can burn, including paper, bedding, furniture, curtains, pets, and people, at least 3 feet away. Space heaters should be monitored while in operation and always turn them off before leaving your home or going to bed. Never use a portable heater in wet areas like bathrooms or small children, or if small children are expected nearby. A message from your fire safety-minded friends here at WMFO in Medford Tufts Educational Radio. We're going to keep going a little bit more on this short story. We're not going to have time to finish it, but I would really highly recommend everyone go read it if you can find it somewhere. It's called Dandelion Wine. But I'm going to keep going for a little bit on the last, or this next section. This section is called Dandelion Wine. In the town then later that day, and yet another harvest, Grandfather stood on the wide front porch like a captain surveying the vast unmotioned calms of the season dead ahead. He questioned the wind and untouchable sky in the lawn on which stood Douglas and Tom to question only him. "Grandpa, are they ready now?" Grandfather pinched his chin. 500, 1,000, 2,000 easy. Yes, yes, a good supply. Pick 'em easy, pick 'em all. A dime for every sack delivered to the press. Hey! The boys bent, smiling. They picked the golden flowers. The flowers that flooded the world, dripped off lawns into the brick streets, tapped softly at crystal cellar windows, and agitated themselves so that on all sides lay the dazzle and glitter of molten sun. Every year, said Grandfather, they run amok. I let 'em. Pride of lions in the yard. Stare and they burn a hole in your retina. A common flower. A weed that no one sees, yes, but for us a noble thing, the dandelion. So plucked carefully in sacks, the dandelions were carried below. The cellar dark glowed with their arrival. The wine press stood open cold. A rush of flowers warmed it. The press replaced, its screw rotated, twirled by Grandfather, squeezed gently on the crop. The golden tide, the essence of this fire. Fine fair month ran, then gushed from the spout below, to be crocked, skimmed of ferment, and bottled in clean ketchup shakers, then ranked into sparkling rows in the cellar gloom. Dandelion wine. The words were summer on the tongue. The wine was summer, caught and stoppered. And now that Douglas knew, really knew that he was alive, and moved, turning through the world, to touch and see it all, it was only right and proper that some of this new knowledge, some of this special vintage day should be sealed away for opening on a January day, with snow falling fast and the sun unseen for weeks or months, and perhaps some of the miracle by then unforgotten and in need of renewal. Since this was going to be a summer of unguessed wonders, he wanted it all salvaged and labeled so that any time he wished, he might tiptoe down in this dank twilight and reach up his fingertips, and there, row upon row, the soft gleam of flowers opened at morning, with the light of this June sun glowing through a faint skin of dust, would stand the dandelion wine. Peer through it at the wintry day. The snow melted to grass. The trees were re-inhabited with bird, leaf, and blossoms, like the continent of butterflies breathing in on the wind. And peering through the color sky from iron to blue. Hold summer in your hand, pour summer into a glass, and a tiny glass, of course, the smallest tingling sip for children. Change the season in your veins by raising a glass to lip and tilting summer in. Ready now, the rain barrel. Nothing else in the world would do but the pure waters which had been summoned from the lakes and far away the sweet fields of grassy dew in the early morning. Lifted to the open sky, carried in laundered clusters, 900 miles brushed with wind, electrified with high voltage, and condensed upon cool air. This water, falling, raining, gathered yet more of the heavens in its crystals, taking something of the east wind and the west wind and the north wind and the south. The water made rain, and the rain within this hour of rituals would be well on its way to wine. Douglas ran with the dipper. He plunged it deep into the rain barrel. Here we go. The water was silk in the cup. Clear, faintly blue silk. It softened the lip and the throat and the heart, if drunk. This water must be carried in dipper and bucket to the cellar, there to be leavened in freshets in mountain streams upon the dandelion harvest. Even Grandma, when snow was whirling fast, dizzying the world, blinding windows, stealing breath from gasping mouths, even Grandma, one day in February, would vanish into the cellar. Above, in the vast house, there would be coughings, sneezings, wheezings, and groans, childish fevers, throats raw as butcher's meat, noses like bottled cherries, the stealthy microbe everywhere. Then, rising from the cellar like a June goddess, Grandma would come, something hidden but obvious under her knitted shawl. This, carried to every miserable room upstairs and down, would be dispensed with aroma and clarity into neat glasses and swigged neatly. The medicines of another time, the balm of sun, and in idle August afternoons. The faintly heard sounds of ice wagons passing on brick avenues, the rush of silver skyrockets, and the fountaining of lawn mowers moving through ant countries, all these in a glass. Yes, even Grandma, drawn to the cellar of winter for a June adventure, might stand alone and quietly in secret conclave with her own soul and spirit, as did Grandfather and Father and Uncle Bert, or some of the boarders, communing with a last touch of the calendar long departed, with the picnics and the warm rains and the smell of fields of wheat, of new popcorn and bending hay. Even Grandma, repeating and repeating the fine and golden words, even as they were said now in this moment when the flowers were dropped into the press, as they would be repeated every winter for all the white winters in this time, saying them over and over on the lips, like a smile, like a sudden patch of sunlight into the dark. Dandelion wine, dandelion wine, dandelion wine. And that's the end of that section. We're going to play a little bit of music for the end of it, but as I said earlier, definitely give that story a read. It's Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury. And a little PSA, you're listening to WMFO 91.5. This is the Mercury Theater on air. We are going to play a little song by The Replacements.
Being afraid. Thank you.
All right. You just heard Suffering Jukebox by the Silver Jews and also Swingin' Party by the Replacements. That brings this radio hour to an end. And I hope you enjoyed the little bit of that short story and whatever tunes I played. And yes, this is the Mercury Theater on air. And remember to tune in. We'll be here next Friday also, but we won't be doing a radio play. But in two Fridays, we will be doing War of the Worlds by Orson Welles and H.G. Wells. So don't miss that. We'll have a whole cast. We'll have sound effects, lots of explosions and laser beams. So yeah, tune back in, and we're going to move on to another show now called Friday Night Fights. Yeah. I'm going to end out with a little Arcade Fire.